Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Well, Northbound Stocks and Jacks, that's Tamale. You just went over the board. SP Futures down 9.25. Dow Futures down 31. NASDAQ Futures down 37. This is after a huge up day yesterday, which was about roughly the same as the huge down day Thursday. So it's she loves me, she loves me not with the market right now. Remember that? That she loves me not? You're supposed to pull out the things on the flower or something, Brendan? Remember that scene?
Yeah, what kind of a flower was that?
I don't know. I'm not
you
sure why.
Pick off one petal at a time. There was a certain type of flower. Was it a forget-me-not flower?
I don't know. Wasn't it, what's the one with the little doesn't a petunia have a bunch of little... I don't know what it was. I'm not a horticulturist sort of dude. How's that for a word?
You know, I always think of you as a master gardener. I mean, just the way you keep digging up dirt on different things and playing in the soil and making things grow.
Well, let's put it this way, Brendan. If you like finding things that don't match up in politics and in the news these days and in policy, it's a fruitful world, shall we say.
It is. It's a very fruitful world.
And I don't understand why it is a society we put up with it, but we do, so... And it seems to me like it's getting worse with the seemingly less and less, I'll say, decent journalism that actually cares about facts instead of their agenda. But I don't know what we can do about that, bud, except try and do something on our own and maybe some people listen here and maybe learn something a little different. Maybe. What do you think?
That's right. Well, it's got to start somewhere to reverse the trend.
I know. It's pretty awful. I mean, I don't know why. I tell you what, I was... Well, I've been getting sent a lot of right-wing stuff like I always am, and I actually listened to a little bit of Fox the other day, and, Brendan, it's awful. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's people here to think that... Just from the get-go, this whole idea of the put-em-on when you're a national news media, this idea that you're constantly put upon because you're like the underdog news media, how long are people going to buy that crap? Or why do they?
I don't know. What story are you specifically referring to?
Well, I was down south and I flipped on a TV. All of a sudden there was Fox on the TV, and of course I didn't put it there. So I listened for a minute, and all of a sudden now they're talking about the grid in Texas. So they got the you know, who wrote a, what do you call them, Eddie? They're not really newscasters anymore. They're just guys that do the interview. But everybody thinks they're news, but they're not. What do you even call those guys? A talk show host, I guess.
Pretty much, yeah.
So they're talking about
infomercials.
Yeah, sort of like an infomercial. And the whole, you know, from what I know about the power thing, and I've gone through this a couple times, but do it again from an engineering side. You want to know where the faults were. You want to know if the design was adequate for that kind of storm. And the answer just might be no, Brendan. It just might be no.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't design for that type of storm in Texas. You know, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles, as they used to say. On the south side.
It's not cost effective to do right. That because it's such an outlier that would happen that it doesn't justify the cost to protect that way.
I mean, you really don't want the city of El Paso to order up 20 salt spreaders.
Right.
Why? I mean, for something that might not happen again forever. But anyway, so you have to figure out, was it a design issue? If it was, who built the piece that broke, right? And if it was a maintenance issue, who's supposed to maintain? I mean, there's a lot of things that you need to spend serious time on to figure out what the hell happened. Could it have been, my guess is it's a combination of all those things, Brendan. That the design was probably not up to that type of storm, but was made worse by people who were supposed to maintain it and stuff weren't. So I came out with Edison here. We've slid forever. For the last 30 years. Because they go and they say they want more money because they're going to do something and they don't do it. Right? I mean, mm-hmm.
Right.
And nobody seems to be able to deal with that. Because they are, the monopolists are now basically bigger than the government, in my opinion, and that's mm-hmm. a big problem. So anyway.
And it would reduce their profits.
Right. But now, did you realize that it's all the work of the left? Because if they weren't forced to have some windmills and stuff on the system, the system would have all been fine. So clearly it's the left's influence on the thing. I'm sitting there listening to this crap, and I'm
going, and the fact that even under the best of circumstances, the wind turbine would have provided 10% of the power
right.
in Texas,
right.
It's all the wind turbine's fault.
Well, absolutely. Plus, it would be because, and I'm sitting there, and if you didn't know any better, if you didn't spend a few years talking to engineers all day long like I did at Pullman, you would never, I mean, obviously you know this, you didn't have to work at Pullman, but at some point you sit there and go, these two people don't know anything what they're talking about. They're just making an accusation. Then the other guy immediately piles into, well, if the other news media, now these guys, you know, if Trump would not have been down there for 2 weeks, like Biden didn't show up for 2 weeks, they'd have been all over him. He didn't care. I mean, now look at the way they're treating Trump. How do you know how somebody else would have been treated when it didn't happen? Talk about a debate
right.
you can't. A debate you can't. If this bleep Brendan was mayor, he'd have done it this way, and he'd have been a bleep. Okay, but you're not mayor.
I definitely would have. If I were the mayor, it wouldn't have happened in the first place because I would have had all the answers.
Yeah, but you don't get to say that. You're not there. That's why you don't get to be part of the debate.
That's why it's very easy for me to say that and fix everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weird part. It's real easy to criticize someone. It's one thing to criticize somebody who's at least there. It's quite another to criticize mm-hmm. somebody who's not there. But how do you win that mm-hmm. battle? Just saying.
You can't.
So what is
you
is
can't
a,
in that battle.
But as a obviously very interested observer, what do you make of the without going into the volatilities and stuff and everything like we did with Mike yesterday? What is somebody who, you know, sitting there with a retirement account, I assume, I don't know my business, but what do you make of this? Is this a sign of health, not health, way down, all of a sudden she loves me? I can't put my finger on where this is all land, Brendan, and it's actually bugging me because I'm supposed to know all the answers.
Okay, what is the it that you're referring to in your sentence?
Is the market going to keep flying up? Is it going to... I mean, the up and down is reaching a point where most people in this that have been around a while say we're going to break out one way or the other. And to me, there's the yin and the yang. There's the pouring of the money into the system, unconscionably money into the system. So some assets are going to go flying up. Some prices are going to go flying up. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Some people are going to win. Some people are going to lose. At the end of the day, is it going to cause something like in the 70s, where all of a sudden you get inflation and people go, you know, this isn't working right? Or are they going to pull it off? And then, and actually 3 years from now, you know, the price level will be double what it is and they're going to be able to pay people back with money that's worth half as much as they borrowed. I mean, it's obviously the game.
That only works if people can also make more money along the way.
That's the piece. Well, some people will. The people who have pricing power. A lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly the people who seem to have access, which isn't you and me, clearly the drug companies have pricing power. I mean, Home Depot has pricing power. I mean, anybody who is influencing has pricing power. I mean, PTI doesn't. I mean, you know, the big law firms I think do. You know, I mean, not to the same extent as a pharmaceutical firm, but hospitals surely do. Where's the competition? They don't even post the damn prices. How do you even know? Right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a...
And they vary. Even within the same hospital, they vary for the same procedure, depending on whether you're person A or person B.
Well, I just got an email yesterday from one of our listeners, and he's got the Blue Cross, and now Northwestern tells him they're not taking his slice of Blue Cross. As far as they're concerned, he's uninsured.
I haven't heard that happening lately.
Oh, there's
something like Blue Cross.
Well, there's you see, when you're one of these Cadillac insurance guys your whole life, there's several levels of Blue Cross now. If you get like the Blue Cross, Obamacare Blue Cross, your selection for hospitals is pretty feeble. I know some real estate
people.
Well,
I know that's true. I mean, I know that the selection on the open market was pretty slim. In a lot of places like Northwestern and the University of Chicago did not carry anything on the open market, because they all went through that in trying to find it a couple of years ago. But, you know, I belong to a health care plan that, I'm in Medicare. And when I went to see my doctor for my physical, I had to be careful at whether they take Medicare. And, you know, a lot of the doctors now are going to what they call concierge service. Have you heard about this?
They
charge a flat rate. They don't take any insurance at all. No insurance at all. And they charge a flat rate, like $2,500, $3,500, $4,000 a year. You get unlimited visits by that. But if you're a relatively healthy person who only goes in once a year for an annual physical, you're effectively paying whatever that is, $25,000, $35,000, $4,000 a year for your annual physical.
There's
a good deal for the doctors, but not so much for the patients.
It's not such a great deal for the doctors. It's for the doctor group. I don't know how much of that filters down to the doctor. I have one that's halfway in there. It's it's $2,000 a year. It includes your annual physical, and you know you got the guy's private phone number and stuff. But when you go for just for a regular visit, you're still paying, or somebody's paying. I mean, you know, not that much, but you're paying.
Hmm.
So there's several levels of that.
But it still undercuts the idea of insurance. I mean, when you buy health insurance, you're gambling, and the insurance company is gambling. You're gambling that the premiums you pay over the course of a year will be offset by what your medical costs are going to be if you are not insured. They're betting that you're going to be healthy and that your premiums are going to outrank what it costs them to pay the doctors and the servicers.
The procedure that I had, I don't mind saying this, it just shows how much the system is messed up. I had something where I had to fix a procedure they did 12 years ago that they thought would last forever, and it didn't, so they had to fix it. So it was no big deal. Although anything they do to you is a big deal, right, Brennan? let's just say that the Medicare paid all the different insurance companies, the Medicare part, whatever, and then the guys that buy supplemental, paid $19,999 for this procedure. Guess what the list price was?
No idea.
Take your wildest guess.
$50,000.
$135,000.
Mm.
For 2 hours. So, if somebody walked in
that sounds a little bit above minimum wage for the procedure.
If you were to take the people in the room and give them all a month's salary and pay an extremely amount of money for the room, I don't see it coming up to be more than $25,000 or $30,000. Let alone,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't see where that number even comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so if you and I didn't have, if we were a skosh below 65 and didn't have insurance, really? $135,000? Now they'll negotiate. Some people have it, some people don't even negotiate. Don't know you can.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's why a lot of people are facing bankruptcy because of health care issues for their family members, either themselves or their family members. That's one of the big crises in this country right now.
And that's where, the thing, I'm sure you've seen this in the law business, but the thing that actually, when I talk to, I talk to everybody, it really bothers me at this time. I mean, people are people. But when I was on the board of the SIBO, and Maddie's bored with this, the people who are on the floor would always focus in on the people like them. Oh, that friggin' Matt Weber, he's been over position limit by four contracts 3 days in a row. He's a recidivist. You know, what are we gonna do with this guy? Let's hang him from the yardarm inside the place. Yet some firm could absolutely rape somebody in a trade and break every rule in the book. It's okay. That's above my pay grade. I can't really do anything about that, right?
Right.
It's stunning to me how people are so anxious to berate people that have big credit card debt. Now, there are people that just run out and, spend like hell. But I don't think
I think the term is spending like drunken sailors.
Right, but I mean, I think when you ask yourself, why do people have a credit card with a balance on it, their intention was never to have a balance on it. The reason why you have a balance on it is because something came up you didn't expect. I mean, we've reported one of the days, I think you were on, and I haven't seen this lately because everybody's getting money from the government. I don't know how much it's worth, but you're getting it. How many people, what percentage of people, Matty, you remember this, didn't have $1,500 cash to throw at something? They had the wealth. They could put it in a credit card.
Oh, yeah. There have been plenty of instances of that lately where something like 45% of the public could not afford to pay cash for an emergency, a $1,500 emergency.
Right.
If your car broke or they need a new refrigerator or something, they wouldn't have $1,500 to apply to that emergency.
Yeah, so you wonder why people's credit card, all of a sudden they've got this big balance. It's something like that. It's a transmission. Mm-hmm. It's a medical bill. It's something. I mean, I'm sure there are people that just once they have their credit card, run out and start buying furniture and going to rich restaurants they can't afford. But I'll bet it's a huge minority. I don't think most people do that. I think you think you're fine, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're sort of not. Did you ever read, Maddie probably has. Did you ever read the book, The Bonfire of the Vanities?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't finish, it was a pretty fascinating book. So, of course, I get two-thirds of the way through. I got the breakfast with my mother. She can't wait to tell me the ending. So I never finished. Don't tell me I'm still reading. Oh, wait. that didn't work.
You might have had a different ending in your book, in your copy. So
you never know. I wish she was back. I missed the breakfast. But anyway, there was a page, man. This dude back in, what was that thing written? 1980-something?
I think it was in the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, the most fascinating page in there was the guy's driving to work, and he's talking about he'd made like $1 million or $1.5 million as he was a currency trader. And and how he went through his list of expenditures, Manny, and let's just say he made $1 million the year before, and he had spent like $1.1 million. He's like, how the hell does anybody... he had the wife who didn't like him, but all she had to do was spend money. She had a Mercedes that hits close to home for you, Manny. She needed a Mercedes, she needed a car, and needed the parking, which even then was like $500 a month in New York, right on the same block. What did she drive it? 500 miles a year before or something? And then he had the girlfriend, and so the wife's bitching at him, and then he heads over to the girlfriend's house, and immediately walks in, she's bitching at him because she was in a one-bedroom apartment, she wanted a two-bedroom apartment, even though it was just her. So he went through this whole routine, but then right about that time, I read this study of people in like every walk of life, every sort of income stratus, and they said basically everybody, and that's a long time ago before the hospital stuff, said every, no matter what you were in, whether you're making $250,000 a year or whether you're making 25, you essentially were 1 or 2 months pay over your skis. That if you said to somebody, Brendan, seriously, well, how much do I need to give you to where you can, you know, take the wife away for a weekend, pay off your credit card bills. Virtually everybody was like 2 months' pay. It was like 15 or 20% of a year's salary. So the guy making $250,000 a year, if you gave him a check for 50, he would be happy. The guy making 25, you gave him a check for 5, he'd be happy. Or not happy, but cleaned up. That virtually everybody was it. And it's pretty fascinating when you think about that.
That book came out in 1987.
There are two other things about this. One is, did you ever see the documentary Happy?
Bits and pieces. Never watched it all the way through.
One of the things about that is, in their study, and they rank people economically from all over the world, including the guy who pulled a rickshaw through the streets of India, in different parts of the world. You know, the farmer in Vietnam, the stockbroker here. And what they found in people, that there's a threshold. And the threshold was people who make $75,000 a year were the happiest. If you're below that, you're struggling to put food on the table. If you're above that, you keep spending like you were talking about right now, where $1 million is never enough because you're spending $1.1 million. And there's always that you actually become less happy when you make more money, which I thought was very fascinating. There is a sweet spot, and it's not that high. It's like $75,000, $80,000 for people to find happiness. So it is interesting that, and people, I think that's also why so many people always consider themselves middle class, you know, because they don't have enough to go out and spend frivolously, even if to you or I they're spending frivolously. Like your example about the guy who made $1 million, spent $1.1 million, he considers him middle class because he's not getting ahead and not able to put a whole money aside for his retirement or for savings because of how he spends. So therefore he's, you know, sort of middle class, even though he's making $1 million or $2 million a year, just like the person who's aspiring to break that $35,000, $40,000, $45,000 a year to just get ahead is aspiring to be middle class.
Well, here I think this is what, whenever the inflation stuff comes in, and I know I'm a broken record on this, half the world doesn't even know what a broken record is, but that, I'll use that term anyway, is that right now the inflation has been insidious because a lot of it's been involved in higher education, which only some people do, and a lot of it's been in hospitalization, which anybody who's on TV, anybody who's a senator, anybody who's a representative, it doesn't affect them. Well, A, because I don't use this term too often, but they're idiots because they don't realize that the $2,000 a month that somebody's paying for hospitalization for them would be theirs in salary if it wasn't paid that way. But it's been happening so long that people don't even consider it. So when you have somebody on CNBC talking about there's no inflation, he doesn't realize that his hospitalization that the firm is paying is up three times since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But the, right. The place you don't want to be, because there's a few people here that work in the building that I know, you don't want to be, Brennan. You can't be making $55,000 a year, 55 to 60, and not getting your hospitalization at work. If you do, I mean, if you're skunked. If you make 50 mm-hmm. and you're getting your hospitalization and all that kind of stuff, you can make do as a family. Certainly 60. But if you're at 60 and you're paying $2,000 a month, or it wouldn't be $2,000 a month, it'd be like $1,400 a month with a $12,000 deductible, you could be, you're the guy with the big credit card bill because the kid broke his ankle playing soccer or something and you had a $10,000 emergency room visit. I mean, that you absolutely can't handle. I mean, there's no way on earth that guy making $60,000 a year, 12 of it, or let's be nice, let's say 10 of it it would be almost $15,000 if you're $1,500 a month, more than that, 18. If you're paying that after tax, and oh, by the way, the minute somebody gets, you're still going to county hospital. You can't afford a regular place. I mean, the difference between being at a spot where you're sort of on the government dole, shall we say, or not, plus the other stuff that happens with the insurance. The difference there, you're like making 25 or 30.
Yeah.
If somebody actually gets hurt or has to go to the hospital or gets sick, I mean, it's pretty scary. And chances are you might not even be able to go to the hospital in your neighborhood. Which I don't know what you do with that. What happens if you and I are, well, you're more than me, if you're dragging along the lake and something happens, you got to go in an ambulance and the five hospitals around you are going to take you to aren't on your thing. What happens to you? Do they ship you somewhere else, or
you get a really big bill? Well, the other thing that happens is you can do all the procedural work in advance to make sure that the hospital is in your coverage plan, and even the emergency room is. But if you have to undergo surgery, your anesthesiologist may not be. So, I mean, you may get most of your bill covered. Then you get a $50,000 anesthesiologist bill, even if you've done the work. If you're going in for a voluntary procedure or something that is elective on your part, you can go through all the procedures and get stuck with somebody some member of the team who's not in that plan, and you're out of plan and really have a high bill to pay.
Well, yeah, and it's in some places, like you say, they're all different though, Brent. I had a biking mishap in the park years ago, and I ended up, what's the hospital right on the park there, like Diversey? You do a lot of elective
surgery. Oh, St. Joe's.
Yeah, so I'm in there, and I get, you know, a couple of months later, I start getting all these bills. Well, okay, the urine test was a guy from Bannockburn. Okay. The blood test is from somebody else. There's like, there had to be like 8 or 9 different people that I was paying.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't like just a bill, and then there was a bill for the emergency room. But none of the people who saw me or did a test, the only one that pissed me off was the doctor came in, the orthopedic surgeon left his Memorial Day party to come work on my hand. Anyway, did a nice job, good guy. And so he, and I paid those guys. Well, like I get this bill from the somebody who reads the x-ray, like 4 days later. It was like $400. This is, you know, it's back a ways. And I go, what did you do? He's like, I read the x-ray. I said, I was already fixed. what I need you to read it for 3 days after the guy operated on my hand? You gotta have it read. The doctor read it, and then he fixed me. Oh, you gotta have it read by the what do they call the radiologist? Mm-hmm. So I said, what'd you do with that knowledge? He goes, well, nothing, but you had to have it read. All right, here's your $400. I had no idea what the guy did other than read it. What does that even mean? So I'm sure if you ever went through your bill, but now in Northwestern, they just send you one bill. So it's easier. I mean, but some hospitals, they all these guys are free agents. Like
yeah,
you say.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah, so, I'm saying that's your point.
If you try to go through the procedure and clear everybody, you can find out that the free agents aren't in your medical plan, and they'll come after you for their full fee.
Brandon, while I still have you, what is your view of this $1.9 trillion bill? I'm sort of shuddering, but I'm not leading a witness. I think there's going to be a huge cost for this, and I think the people that are going to pay for it are not the same people getting the money, like usual.
I hope that a lot of the people who really need the money get it. I'm afraid that there's going to be a lot of wasteful spending in there. I do think a plan is needed to help out a lot of people in the United States right now. and I think that there's a lot of unfair pushback, and it should be really focused more on where the money is going, not that we don't need the stimulus plan, not that we don't need the money for the general public.
Well, I try to do one without the other. I mean, do you really need $160 billion for vaccines we already bought and gloves and masks? It seems like a lot. I'd like to read that. I'd like to have my finger in that pile. Let's put it that way.
Right, but I think that if that's going to reimburse cities like Chicago or Cook County or the state of Illinois for any out-of-pocket costs they had to buy the vaccines, I think that's legitimate to help to diffuse the cost across the country. Other things, not so much.
Well, but we bought, according to what I read in the Operation Warp Speed, we bought 100 million doses in advance from 7 different places. Now, some of them haven't come up with a vaccine, right? So we wasted that money. They may still. I mean, so I'm being a little harsh there. But how many more do we need, Brendan? I mean, we're talking about every one of them, every contract. Well, I didn't read the whole contract, but everything I read seems to me that depending on if you got money from the government in advance or not, it was somewhere between 12 and 20 bucks a shot. Okay. So if we get a billion of them, we're talking about $20 billion, and that part of the bill is $160. Mm-hmm. Where's the other $140 going? I mean, what are we doing?
I haven't seen the breakdown, so I can't answer that for you. But, when you talk about the advance purchase of them, that was a gamble that was being made to effectively try to vaccine the public quicker.
I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Legitimate gamble.
I thought that that was a real smart thing to do from the Trump administration, much as I hate to give them kudos. I thought that was actually stone-cold brilliant. I really did. Because you know what? It seemed like a lot of money, Brendan, but compared to how much everybody's losing, and it was a pimple in the ass of an elephant. I mean, it really was, compared to all the rest of the money flying around.
Well, I agree. And that was a kind of a gamble that had to be made, that he had to make that kind of investment, that somebody would develop it in quick order and be able to distribute it in quick order. So, even for investment in a vaccine that never came about, I think that was a risk that had to be taken.
Plus, it looks like they're winning on 4 out of 7, so that's pretty good. Brendan, thank you very much, buddy. Talk at you next week. S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures down 24. Coming back here, we were down more than that when we came in. Be right back with Mr. Joel Uncommon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right
here, right now, right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, just on the board. S&P futures down 5 now only. Nasdaq futures down 18. Not much considering a huge rally yesterday. Dow down 17. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 74.5%. FTSE up 45.6%. CAC around up 35.6%. So they're sneaking up a little bit because they closed and we went even higher yesterday. So for Asia, we got the Nikkei down 255. These guys have been all over the place. They were down 4% on Friday, up like 2.5% yesterday. And now they're crazy stuff. Down, like I said, down 255. It's 0.9%. Shanghai down 42. It's 1.2%. Hang Seng down 356. 1.2. So these guys were down over 1,000, then they were up like 700, now they're down 356. I mean, talk about wild. Just a review yesterday, Dow up 603, that's almost 2%. S&P up 90, that's 2.4%. NASDAQ up 396, that's 3%. So, they put the whip to it yesterday for sure. Bonds unchanged at 1.44. So all they did yesterday was talk about how the bonds had come back, the yield. Not really. I mean, we had that spike on Friday at 1.6, but 1.44 is, you know, pretty high compared to recently. Bund minus 0.31, Japan positive 0.13. We've got oil up 16 cents, 60.80, so that's actually down from the 62 last week, even though it's up today. Brent up 7 cents, 63.76. Natural gas up 2 cents, 2.80. RBOB unchanged at 194, so that's up like 20 or 25 cents in the last couple of weeks. Like I said, I paid 40 cents more at my place than I did 2 weeks ago. Gold up $4, but $17.27. That's on with a very low end of the range. I actually did some more buying in there yesterday. I don't know if I'm throwing good money after bad. I don't know. We'll see. Silver down 32 cents, $26.35. Copper up 5 cents, $4.17. Copper goes up relentlessly. And the crypto, Bitcoin up 316 to $48,734. A lot of stuff, Maddie. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a serious crash, Chief, on the tri-state on the northbound side between 95th Street and Archer Avenue. Apparently, a semi was stopped and another semi crashed into the back of it at full speed at Roberts Road.
That can't be good.
Not good, yeah, on the northbound side of the tri-state right at Roberts Road there. So that has traffic backed all the way up to Cicero and growing, and that's been going on for the better part of the morning. So that's a serious issue on the northbound tri-state, so you want to avoid that if at all possible. Not affecting the southbound side. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. The Stevenson, we have a crash way southwest, I-55 northbound at Illinois 126, which is exit 261. That crash is blocking the left lane, so expect some delays if you're way southwest coming inbound on I-55. No issues on the outbound side. Eisenhower, all quiet. Same for the Edens and Kennedy and Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, there's one issue up in the northern suburbs. Railroad gates are malfunctioning at Town Line Road, right at Butterfield Road there, which is a pretty busy intersection up in the northern suburbs, so keep that in mind if you're heading in that direction. Weather today, we warm up a little bit from yesterday. Sunshine, a high of 44, as we will begin a stretch here of 40s, 50s, and then by Monday, we could touch 60s. So enjoy some sunshine and some milder weather beginning today. Right now, it is clear and 25, going up to a very pleasant 44 degrees. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 80 today. Right now, it's clear and 50. In sports, the Bulls were the only game in town last night, and they were down big early at home to the Nuggets. Stormed back, took a late lead, only to give it up down the stretch as they fell at home, 118-112. Chief.
Should we be, like, really morbid? I'm not recommending this. I'm just asking you, since you're the producer. Should we have, like, a pool on Friday of how many murders and shootings we'll have this weekend, our first warm weekend?
I mean, I wouldn't have a pool, but I can tell you it's probably going to be a scary number.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. Joe, how are you, buddy? Go Blue.
Go Blue, Chief. How you doing this morning?
You think those guys play football?
Football, what's that?
Yeah, what's that? Did you see yesterday afternoon that your buddies down the Tide, Roll Tide, are first to come out and say full stadium access this year?
Yeah, I sure, you know, congratulations to them. They're making a bold move there. They made a move last year that kind of preempted what the Big Ten did, so... knock on wood. Michigan sent out tickets, and they're talking about, you know, capacity. I haven't heard anything about full capacity, but that would be good. That would be good news.
Well, if they're going to sell you the ticket, I think they're going to have to let you in. Of course, they didn't this year.
Chief, Michigan has been on a little bit different scale with dealing with the pandemic than some of the southern states. So we'll see what the university mandate is, and we'll see what the state mandate is. I want to say a long ways away, and things could be a lot better, but I think you're going to need a lot higher vaccination rate before you do something like that.
I think I'll go to an Alabama game. Maddie, we should have a field trip.
You can go if you want. I would love to go to a night game in the SEC. That was something that was on my bucket list, but it will be postponed on the bucket list at least for this year. But big game tonight. The Wolverines are entertaining the Fighting Illini.
Yeah.
They may be down one of their best players, but I think they're still fired up. Michigan can clinch the Big Ten title with a win. Man, I tell you, Juwan Howard, he is coaching the big men. What he's doing with this freshman, Hunter Dickinson, 7'2", brings Austin Davis off the bench, also Brandon Johns. There's some great NBA. I mean, the top NBA prospect probably on the team is Franz Wagner, and he might be the third most important player on the team. If you go with Hunter Dickinson and Isaiah Livers is hitting 48% from the field, 42% from the three-point line. They play tenacious defense. I'm excited. I don't know if I'll be able to go to Indy to watch them, but, man, you got me excited about Michigan basketball.
What is the scoop with this kid in Illinois? Who bopped him?
Yo, it was a state player. It was in the state game.
Oh, he got hurt in the game?
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying that was an unfair hit. I think the kid did get a flagrant foul on it. I haven't watched it that closely. I think it was dirty, but I don't think it was malicious.
What was it, with an elbow? I mean, did he break a bone or something?
Yeah, he broke his nose.
Oh, okay.
He drove down the lane, and it was a very hard foul by the Michigan State kid, who was kind of a role player, big guy, you know, kind of a goon-type player.
A heck.
Yeah, and Illinois' best player drives down the lane, and he clobbers him, doesn't go for the ball, so he gets, like Joel said, gets called for a flagrant. The Illinois kid, Io DeSumo, who's, you know, in the running for National Player of the Year. I mean, he's a big-time player. He's gonna be first-team All-Big Ten for sure. He finished the game with the broken nose, but then afterward they decided to keep him out for a while, so he's missed the last two games, and he's...
You have to wear one of those face things?
Yeah, I think he's going to have to for the... I don't know if they're going to keep him out for the rest of the regular season and then have him wear the mask beginning in the conference tournament or what.
You got to be careful, because if that doesn't heal right, you're screwed up for a long time. Right. Like, maybe forever.
And he's a lottery pick, so they're... I mean, he's being extra cautious.
I'm worried about the kid breathing when he's 50.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not as concerned about his basketball.
Well, I can tell you he's more concerned about the millions and millions of dollars on the line as opposed to breathing when he's 60.
Breathing's kind of important, though. Just saying.
It is.
I think they're going to break him out, maybe, perhaps, for this game. But like you said, Chief, first things first with the health. So hopefully
I thought it was like a break in the eye socket or something. Nose isn't as bad. But you got to be real careful because, you know, you can breathe for the rest of your life, hopefully.
It was a dirty play. I mean, it was a dirty play.
So was the second string defensive end taking out the other guy's quarterback, that kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah. It was like the backup power forward.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, you know, the weird part is in college, I don't know, I should go on. You watch the protection they give the pro quarterbacks and so forth now. It's way, way more than college because they're paying people more. I'm just saying. So... Yeah.
Oh, and market sentiment, Chief, before I hop, I mean, big old day yesterday. I was expecting an up day, not quite to that level. We had a weak close on Friday, beginning of the month rebound, one hell of a rebound. Like to see us holding here today, maybe not necessarily, you know, add tack on a lot, but have a positive day, and then we'll probably sit around for a couple of days. We have... you know, Pump and Powell speaking on Thursday, and then we have, of course, the jobs number on Friday. But very impressive comeback day yesterday in the market, led by some of the big caps, which had been lagging lately.
Well, the weird part is, Joel, some of my positions were right where we were Wednesday night.
I know. It was, I tell you, that was a rug pull on Friday, big selling balances, and, man, whoever... sold it in the hole like that. They started ripping it Sunday night.
Yep.
Never looked back. So very unusual day. Let's see if we can hang in here another day. Build a base around 3900.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you next week.
That all-time high.
Talk to you next week. Go Blue. S&P futures down 3 now only. NASDAQ futures down 14. Back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Low and North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali. Just Matt Weber on the board. We have S&P futures down 3.25 and NASDAQ futures down 16. We were down more than that last night and earlier. We have Mr. Kenny. I don't think we do yet. Also, we have individual stocks that are moving. I've got the Goldman Sachs up one. I've got really nothing much else, and the Dow doing much of anything here this morning. Kenny, you with us, bud?
I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing good. I mean, I don't know which was more significant, the sell-off day or the buy day, or are we just back to even?
I think on both sides, I think both were exaggerated, right? I mean, what we saw last week, I understand it, and we've been talking about that, as yields rise, stock's going to reprice. But I think the speed at which we saw some of that stuff reprice last week might have been a little bit of a reaction, but I still think 1.5% creates that tipping point where people start to reconsider it. Yesterday's spectacular rally, though, is funny because it happened around the world. Asian markets, then European markets, then U.S. markets, because apparently everyone around the world concerned about what 10-year U.S. rates are doing.
I think that once people start, I think that the market fabric, Kenny, is so horse bleep that once we start running one direction, we just keep going that way.
Yeah, agreed.
This momentum trading is, I mean, yesterday every single stock was, and all we are is right back to where we were Wednesday, because I've got a big position in the Russell for my people, and I did the 227.5 strike last week, and guess what? Yesterday I did the 227. We're right back to the same spot after being down to where? 221 or something?
I hear you.
I mean, it's kind of crazy, but I still, you know, what's interesting is the volatility from what I watch, because I have some people in, some of the people in my place are doing, it's kind of interesting, to me, Kenny, not because, I mean, you keep more track of some of these, companies than I do. I mean, but now part of our group, my brother's got a few clients now, we're actually putting together somewhat of a you know, it's not to be sold as a basket or anything, we're not like trying to do that, but they're trying to accumulate a basket of all these stocks that are going to do well with the electric cars, the battery people, the car people, and it's pretty fascinating learning about all these companies, because I've always been, you know, I was 20 years in the OEX pit, you know, so I always was an index trader, and for my clients, you know, they bring in stocks and stuff, but basically I try and get diversity through the protected index program, so we're always in baskets of stocks, you know, but obviously it's really nice to find one at $2, in 2 years it's 200.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to do that once in a while. I mean, wouldn't anybody? I'm starting to, you know, branch out a little bit. At least I'm not putting my people in them that much, but I'm trying to learn more about this other, because there's so many of these stocks I never heard of. It reminds me of 1999. We'd stand on the OEX pit going, what is that company? Well, it's trading 200, you idiot. Well, who are they? I don't know. Nobody knows. What do they do? They have any revenue? Nah, no revenue.
Whatever they want to do.
Yeah, it's
true. Remember, 1999, and as long as it had a .com after its name, no one even cared what it did. It just had .com.
I swear, right? Kenny, they put big buildings of, you know, Kenny.com, and somebody in the pit would go, I bet they just rented a sign yesterday. like they didn't even own the building, which they probably didn't. I'm looking at the Fed, and they're up to yet another record in the balance sheet. Are they already head starting on this 1.9? Are they going to add another? Kenny, I don't see them going damn near $10 trillion on the balance sheet. What are they doing? I mean, who's going to pay that money back?
Can you imagine? Because it's going to be, I think if they do this 1.9, I think it brings it up to $8 trillion, doesn't it? Or is it just over $8 trillion?
We're approaching 10.
And before this is over, we're going to get to 10, because, and we talked about this the last couple of times too, is that, you know, now they're going to announce this tremendous infrastructure program. Some people think it could be as much as $3 trillion in infrastructure. That's going to put us over $10 trillion.
As of last week, have it right here, Kenny, just in case you might mention it. 7.590 trillion.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, once in a while, I mean, it's not up to me to grade people's papers, especially people on TV, because they sure as hell.
Yeah.
But when it comes to economics, don't you think, Kenny, wouldn't you think that if you're going to be on national TV and you start tossing around economic terms, that you should at least have some idea what the hell you're talking about?
I mean, a thousand percent. You should absolutely have some idea what you're talking about.
I mean, when we talk about this is a fiscal, this is a fiscal stimulus.
Yeah.
What percentage of the $1.9 trillion? Now you're going to make a much better stab at this than me. What percentage of that is going to be borrowed versus printed? Would you say?
That's an interesting question. How much is going to be borrowed versus how much is going to be printed?
Because the part that's borrowed is fiscal stimulus. The part that's printed is monetary stimulus. And these guys are saying it's all fiscal.
Right.
No,
so
it's
I
not.
I think the bigger portion of it. I think the bigger percentage is going to be the Fed, right?
I bet they're not planning on actual borrowing more than 10% of it. Now, when I say that, to be actually correct here, they're going to go borrow it, okay, through the Treasury to the public. And the second they do, the Fed is going to come buy it right back. So,
yeah. So
they're going to say, what do you mean? We borrowed it all. Bolt, bolt. You did for like an hour. Okay.
Right.
But I don't know. Is the Fed actually, this is a good question. I don't know if this would even be legal, Kenny. Can the Fed actually go into the auction and buy it from the auction, or they got to let somebody else get it first?
Wait, say that again?
Can the Fed buy it directly from the Treasury at the auction, or they got to do the two-step for you to buy the million-dollar bond and then come the Fed come buy it from
you?
I don't know.
I don't know how that works. I'm not sure they can buy directly, can they?
I don't think they can, really. I tell you what, most people would think they shouldn't be able to. Why even have the middle step? Give Goldman their commission. Why not just print it and send it out there?
Yeah, I guess you're right. But then the guys at Goldman wouldn't be happy because they'd get cut out.
That's never going to happen. No.
Goldman would lobby hard for that not to happen, right?
Why don't we get the Chief and Kenny firm, and all we are is a primary dealer? We wouldn't have to do anything else.
Right.
Well, there's only, what, 8 or 9 primary dealers? Something like that?
Yeah, I think that's it.
What was the name of the guy? Corzine. Isn't that what he wanted to do with his firm before he blew it up?
John Corzine, you're talking about?
Yeah.
What was the name of that firm that he blew up?
I don't know.
I think it was.
Yeah, because he wanted to be a primary dealer for sure. He had worked for Goldman, right? And then he was the governor and the senator.
Then he ran for governor, and he lost, and then he went and became CEO of whatever that, I forget what the name of that firm, began with an M.
Well, he won something. He was a senator. He was the governor, was in the car crash. He made it.
Yes, correct. But he ran for senator or for governor? I forget which one he ran for.
Well, one of them he won.
He what?
He won one of them. He was
a senator, and then he ran for governor.
Okay.
He lost the governorship.
All right, because I thought he was the governor that got in the car crash without his seatbelt on.
I thought he was a senator when that happened.
Well, you're closer to the action. I'm going to say you're right on this one, but
yeah, but you know, I forget that was when was that? Back in the early 2000s, I guess, right? I forget exactly when he was running, but he got in that car crash, and then there was all kinds of speculation and whatever.
Yeah, I was thinking this morning on the way in. Maddie and I were talking that when this is all going to have to be paid for one of these days, Kenny, and I just wonder how wide the spread is going to be between the people who benefited and the people who end up paying.
Yeah.
I mean, I was stunned at the, I stopped for an adult beverage last week after a big workout, Kenny, after a body sculpting. And the lady who, the lady who was waitressing, she's still a flight attendant. She goes, they're all still getting paid. It's does that mean like the chairman of United Airlines is still getting his regular paycheck?
I'm sure he is. I'm sure they're all getting paid, right? I don't think the chairman of any one of those, Delta, United, any one of them, I don't think they stop getting paid.
Well, I mean, the same amount.
In fact, they'll probably give themselves a raise.
All right. So, as a country, we're gonna spend multiple bazillions of hours in bars and coffee shops this weekend, bitching about somebody who shouldn't be getting their $1,400 bucks and we don't even have a clue that somebody's getting paid. God knows, I don't want anybody to go under, Kenny, but I can't believe that these cruise lines and airlines, I mean, cruise lines especially, how the hell are they still in business?
I don't know how they're in business. They did, you know, they, well, because they've been getting the support. They brought everything in, and they're just hanging out. But now what's happening, they're already starting. If you listen to them, they're already booked way into the future now. People who are dying to get out and go traveling have already booked. I don't know why anyone. I wouldn't go on a cruise again. I was on a cruise once in my life. You feel like you're trapped when you're on it. Yeah, it might have been all well and good. You know, we cruised around the Mediterranean, blah blah blah. But you know, it's rushed. When you pull into a port, you have 7 hours to go do something and get back to the port before the boat takes off again, and then you feel like you're trapped on the boat. I'm just not a fan of cruising.
I would do a matter of fact, if we could go. I would do a river cruise in Germany or someplace.
The river cruise, because those are different, right?
Yeah.
Because you're actually going slowly down the river. When you stop, you can actually get out. You're right there. When you go on these big cruises, like I was on the Royal Caribbean cruise, when we pulled into Civita Vecchia in Italy, we had to get on a bus. We had 7 hours to get into Rome, go walk it around, get back on it. So we had to get on a bus. We had to drive an hour and a half to go into Rome. Then you had, you know, about 4 hours to run on, get back on the bus, get back to the boat, and then take off again. It's like exhausting.
What happens
it's not
if somebody
relaxing to do that?
What happens if somebody doesn't show up?
Well, then they miss the boat, and then it's up to them to figure out where the next stop is, and they've got to meet the boat at the next stop.
Oh, literally.
You know, it is, unless you pull right into where, like when you pull into Venice, you're right in Venice, so therefore you get off the boat, you walk around, you're right there. But when you pull into some of these ports where you actually have to get on a bus and you've got to go an hour and a half to go to wherever it is you're going, A, it's rushed, and you're cramped, and you're tired, and you're, you know, everyone's cranky, and I'm not interested, not at all.
Well, I mean, the detail of this, which of course, whatever side of the aisle you're on, the detail, I'm not going to read everything, Kenny, and neither are you, but I don't want the cruise industry to go under. I don't want those people getting laid off. You and I both, we care about people. That's why we like each other. Is it totally a grant? I don't really want somebody here who's got his own business. And he may or may not have gotten some. You gotta up his taxes to pay for a cruise line. The guy's never going to go on a cruise like you. I mean, at some level here, what are we doing? What are we accomplishing? I mean,
I don't know what we're accomplishing. That's a legitimate argument. You've heard a lot of people voice that argument over the last year, right? As we're talking about who we're going to save, who doesn't get saved, why do they get saved, why do I have to pay for it, all that kind of stuff. And so I agree with you.
Well, I mean, I don't understand
the cruise line, but yes, I understand. I don't want to see all those people go out. I don't see that industry out of business. But why do I have to be the one to pay for it, or you have to be the one to pay for it?
Well, I mean, the airlines, I understand we need them, but when you say I want you to keep paying your people, hey, nobody gets more than two bills a year. Nobody's getting $4 million or whatever.
Right. I mean, you know. CEOs, I think during this whole thing, if we start seeing these CEOs, you know, get these huge pay packages, I think that's going to be another uproar, right? That the whole country gets shut down, your industry gets shut down, people get laid off, and you still walked away with a multi-million-dollar pay package for what?
Well, Kenny, you know how that works. It comes out on a Friday night. If it's a nice weekend, nobody reads it, and by Monday, nobody cares.
It's buried in the weekend papers, right.
As they used to say on the trading floor, I don't know if they did in New York, you can't take a drink out of a fire hydrant. The news comes at you so fast. Take care of yourself, bud. And
All right, I'll see you next week.
Plus, I'm going to say you needed more than 4 hours in Rome, being Italian. Take care, bud. SP Futures down 350, NASDAQ Futures down 5. Come back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Mike Hart.
Okay.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. It's Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph with us. Mike was in, then he said he was out. Now we have Jeff, which is terrific. We have Mike yesterday and we have Jeff today. S&P futures down 350. NASDAQ futures down $5. And I'm kind of surprised that, Jeff is standing after he's just gotten slain, an arrow to the heart with this ultra millionaires tax that's going to come right after him.
How about it? That was all about me, right?
Just thinking. Yeah. The guys like Jeff Joseph, right here, it says right in the article, ultra-millionaires tax. Uh-huh. Did you read anything about this? It just came out.
Well, I'm actually a lot more concerned about the $35 tickets for going 6 miles an hour over the limit. That starts Monday. That started yesterday.
Yeah.
In Chicago. Yeah.
That's ridiculous, by the way.
Isn't it, Matt? I mean, really. Right?
Well, do you have any idea how much those guys to put?
Talk about a police state, huh?
Well, how much money did they put? Did they? Then the company is from Australia, right? To put all these things in, or was?
I don't know. No.
Well, there was one company where the guy went to jail because he was giving kickbacks to the alderman, right? And they shifted companies. And doesn't the company, they paid for the cameras, and then all of a sudden there was this big brouhaha regarding the cameras. There was a big issue, so then the former mayor said, no, we're not going to do that anymore, because especially with all the people getting kickbacks. And I think some of the ticket, now again, this is recollection, some of the ticket, I think, goes to the place in Australia. I think they get a chunk of the ticket.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And
the way they sold off parking.
Yeah, and so it's a way to reward those guys, because I think they're bitching and moaning because they put these cameras in and now they're not getting any revenue. I think they put them in for free, Jeff, or for free. I mean, they put it in under a contract,
sure,
of some kind.
Right.
So do you think Lori could possibly be doing anything more to make herself a one-term mayor?
Yeah. I think she's pretty much secured that role already.
I don't.
And then if that isn't bad enough, go 11 miles an hour over and it's a $100 fine, right?
I got to believe that this is going to be a massive kickback on her.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it becomes, after a while, Jeff, it becomes personal, and it shouldn't. But I don't, the taxing from these people, these creatures that we put in all office, it's always about something they're never going to do. I mean, it's going to be a tax on people who park downtown. Because an alderman, he gets to park right in front of City Hall, right? I mean, they're never going to put a tax on something they do. So, let's put a tax on strip joints. Not that I'm a strip joint guy, but they're going to say, I never go to the strip joint. Let's tax those guys. You know? I mean, the whole concept of finding something you don't do and somebody else does and tax that. Can we wipe that out of the books? Well, I guess we can't, huh?
I don't think we can.
I mean, what are the chances of an alderman having to pay his ticket?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't count on that.
No.
What I really like is the thought that went into this kind of mini amnesty program about it. For example, I'm trying to recall this right, but if you had a ticket in the last 8 years, or if you have not had a speeding ticket in the last 8 years, you get one warning. But if you have had a speeding ticket in the last 8 years, you don't get any warnings on this, 6 mile an hour overage.
Well, I was just going to ask you about this wealth tax thing, but it's the same. That's why I kind of like doing the show, Jeff, is because everything seems to be the same sub. When I was in grad school, I took advanced marketing, and then I took advanced cost account. When you get to the upper levels of every one of the subjects, I think it's almost like when Belushi saw the sun come through with the nun, you realize it's all the same subject. The advanced marketing is the same as advanced accounting. One doesn't work without the other. They're either all there or they're not, right? And what you're saying on this is we have the driving in the city. I don't know if you had the pleasure of driving like on the Dan Ryan or the Stevenson. The Ryan's the worst. In the last, several months. If you don't get passed up by six or seven people going 100 miles an hour, you'll never see a policeman, ever. And you wonder why in the last year with the pandemic, the amount of accidents are down, yet the amount of deaths are actually up. I mean, there is zero law enforcement. And if you're in the city, you'll stop for red light and the guy right next to you goes right through. Stop signs, nobody looks at those. You can pick the spot of the city and you can tell, and I can tell you the type of the car and the color of the person in it, who's doing it. And they're all doing it in their own way. On the north side, it's an SUV with a lady on a text blowing through the stop sign. Whatever. It's, or on the expressway, it's going to be some guy going 90 miles an hour when it's snowy. And yet now we're just going to go, we're going to fall back to this camera routine. We really don't care if anybody's going that fast. We're just going to send them a bill. Because she basically came out the first day and said, this is all revenue. This has nothing to do with safety. I mean, how do you even say that?
That's right.
I want to talk to you a little bit about this Elizabeth Warren thing. Not in terms of, I'm no fan of the ladies. But when you look at something like this, how do you equate things? I mean, in the Obama administration, I'll give you a couple of examples, Jeff, and then you tie it together because you're better at that than me. In the Obama administration, he and Bush, when Bush was just leaving and we had the problems in 2008, they gave so much money to banks that it was unconscionable. They basically said, you're not getting any interest, you're not getting this. By the way, the fees can go to the moon. We're going to allow them all to combine if they want to. And at the end of the day, the people, even Washington, they looked at the amount of money the banks had and they're horrified. And then they said, okay, well, you did a bunch of stuff wrong, so we'll fine you idiots, whatever, $2 billion apiece or something. The public looks at it and goes, man, they must be doing their job. I always thought, Jeff, that those fines were just a way to give back some of the money because the banks didn't even bitch about it. They said, look, we expected you guys to have $10 billion on the balance sheet. Now you got $15 billion. We want $2 billion of it back, so here's like some half-ass fine. I honestly thought that was what do you do when your program gets somebody way too much money? Like, when Elizabeth Warren here, she's got this thing that's going to be incredibly unpopular, right? It probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But what do you do now with this $1.9 trillion program, which is now the third one, right? At the end of the day, at the end of the year, year and a half, when you look at all these programs and you say, gee, here's the guy working for Jeff making, $40,000 a year. We didn't really help him much. We gave him a check of $2,000, but oh, by the way, his rent went up $2,000, so we didn't help him so much. But here's some other people. Holy bleep, Batman. Here's these couple of rich guys or these couple of companies that used to have this much money and now they've got like 10 times more. Our programs did not land evenly. They did not land well. And we seem to have made ultra-millionaires when everybody else was having trouble because of our programs. Now, Elizabeth Warren looks at it and says, well, here's a way. Let's tax those guys and get some of that money back. Okay? I think that's part of what they're doing here. I don't think it's the right way to do it, but I think I understand the where they're going with this.
The irony of that, though,
I'm not agreeing with it, by the way.
I think the other point is that she's been proposing a tax like that, a wealth tax or millionaire's tax, for in the progressive side of the party has been doing it for some time, and has it's independent of the pandemic. That's just the opportunistic nature of a politician now to find yourself in the majority, and then to have a, you know, no good crisis goes to waste. So I would not attribute this to being a response to the an economic response to the pandemic recession. This is something that they would have done 5 or 10 years ago had their been in control and able to do it. So I think that's part of the disingenuous nature of the whole story, right?
Well, but I think, okay, but I'm not, I mean, as you know.
There's no new concept about a wealth tax, you know, for hypermillionaires.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this, Jeff, and it's a sloppy feed. I understand that, but we're talking about, you know, sloppy policy all along the way. It when you have, say you have an antitrust thing that you and I think agree on, okay? And somehow, over the last 10 or 15 years, the antitrust people make that 20 or 25 years have done a horse bleep job, okay? And you let, say, 15 hospitals combine into five. And all of a sudden, you see one of the guys that are at the top of his hospital making, you know, $100 million a year. And you go, how the hell did that happen? I mean, you obviously, I don't have to worry how much Jeff Joseph gets paid at Luckbox Magazine, because I know it's a very competitive industry, and he's trying his heart out. And if they paid Jeff Joseph $10 million, they can't do it. I don't have to worry how much, you know, Nick at the Tripoli Tap pays himself, because if he pays himself $1 million, guess what? The Tripoli's gone under. But we have so many, as we get into these areas where, I mean, you and I agree, I think we have a lot of areas now that are not competitive, where unfortunately I do have to care how much the head of Commonwealth Edison makes and considers it an expense to raise the rates even more. I mean, it shouldn't be that way, Jeff, but it is. I mean, how do you, after the end of 20 years, go, I don't know how the hell Jeff Bezos got here, or I don't know how the hell, you know, Amazon got this money. We let these guys become monopolists. We shouldn't have done it. But now look, five guys there are making more than any other 10,000 people in the country. Their response is going to be, I can't fix it, so I'll tax them, which I think is wrong. But what else do you do when you realize you just basically bleeped up the whole way and 20 people are making all this dough? You just let it go?
Way too many questions in that question.
I know, but
I'd pick up on one of the factors you mentioned, which was the antitrust laws. You know, we've just completely fallen asleep at the wheel for the last couple of decades. You know, it's almost a silly comparison now to look at the activism that antitrust legislation had back with the telco breakups, and even try to make a comparison with where we are with Amazon and the likes of Amazon and Google right now, which are so much broader in terms of everything, and not just revenue and reach and market share, but they're just so much bigger than anything we've ever seen, and there is just zero attempt. What happened to Warren's vocal discussion of that, you know, in the before the election period or during, you know, or the run up to the general.
You always
election.
Want somebody else to break people
I,
up. You
I,
don't
I
want
question
to
question if you'll really see anything happen there.
No, I'm just trying. The person, I think we agree on, very opportunistic.
Sure,
but I mean,
this isn't about Warren. It's a larger question of just not doing it. I mean, you know, we talk about there's an inequity in our tax structure. We all know it when it comes to capital gains. It's not right. It's not right that someone that doesn't need any income because their investments are making income are charged tax at a much, much lower rate. But, you know, tell Chuck Schumer that, where all the hedge funds are in the state of New York.
You know who, you remember, I know you know the name, Dan Rasnikowski. I remember him being interviewed one day.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And they asked him about capital gains, and he said, I don't understand why we just don't index it. And he said, it's been the smartest thing to do for 30 years, and I've never gotten anywhere with that idea. In other words, if for those don't know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
If you buy, you know, a building for, you know, $1 million, say, in the next 10 years, the CPI, like it's going to happen in the next 10 years, doubles, and you sell the building for $2 million, you haven't made any money, right? But if you buy it in one year, and the next year, the expressway's coming through there, and you sell it for $2 million, you just doubled your dough. I mean, so if it's a year and a day, why? His point was just index the damn thing and charge ordinary income. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes so much sense.
And then
sense.
We'd only be talking about your proposition that that inflation isn't accurately measured.
Well, okay, but at least you're into something. but there's something there. But I mean, the point is, there's what makes 1 year. One, if it's a year where inflation is 15%.
Yeah, what's the magic in 1 year?
Yeah, what's the magic in 1 year? And why should somebody, you know, who bought a house in 1940, and now he sells it for 20 grand more, did he make any money? I'm thinking, no. Real? Did he? So, I mean, there's so many inequities when you have the one thing there. Right. So, I mean, it's kind of, but why, you know, how do you go back? And, I mean, one time, we had a listener, when I kind of counted on for a while, and when I say counted on, when he sent me something was accurate. We first started the show, man. Who sent us the letter saying that 1 year the guy who was the head of United Health made so much money, and then he got some kind of bonus for something? It's like, that the dude ended up making like 1% of like all the money in the medical community or something. It was some amazing amount of cash for one guy. I mean, I don't think that there's a lot wrong there. I don't know if a tax helps out at all, but you know. I don't know. I mean, they're, but everybody sees. That's why, I mean, Jeff, and I think you're on the same page with me. Even if you don't like the way a person comes at you, like Elizabeth Warren, God, she reminds me of the aunt I never wanted. It doesn't mean that what she's seeing isn't there. You know what I'm saying? These massive inequities, mm-hmm. and how'd they get there? If it was you and me working overtime like in the old days, and we worked Saturdays and Sundays in our neighbors went on their bass boat, and that was their decision, and that was ours. I don't remember those guys being pissed off that you and I made more money because they saw, hey, those guys work on Saturdays. We don't want to. I mean, but now it's everybody who seems to be getting ahead has some sort of a little carve out with government or something, or there's some edge there that, and you know what? I think people think it's at the basis of a lot of what we're seeing, the arguments back and forth between right and left, because you sit there and go, you know, how did that guy get that? Well, he's got this, you know, I had a guy come in here, a potential client, and said, with the city of Chicago or the county, all you need is one contract, whether you're serving mm-hmm. breakfast at the jail or something, and it puts you on another level. You know what? One way to go about it is to look afterward and say, anybody who, is there, we should tax them more, but I don't like that solution, Jeff, but I can't see of any other, can you?
It's true. Not a friend, somebody I've never spoken to before, but it was for business purposes, shared with me on the phone today, he's out in New York, that as one of his side gigs, he was waiting for his friends to assume more political power, and as a result, he just landed $560,000 of PPP money for a N95 mask company and already secured a government contract. And he just offered that. It was actually a disgusting thing to speak so proudly of. You know, no experience in that business and just solely based on a political relationship that he was waiting to come into fruition.
Sort of on the same line, Jeff. I have to tell you a story about one of my buddies. Has a friend he went to law school with, right? The friend, this is last May maybe when this whole thing first started. And there weren't enough masks. They were just starting to get to this mask thing. Well, the guy had something like 3 pallet loads, like 1 million masks, that landed in O'Hare. And he was looking, he needed to store them for a place for the weekend, and could we find him a storage facility for like 4 days? Which, of course, we did. Then he ended up finding a storage facility near the airport. That guy was going to make, I bet, what do you think he paid for them in China? A cent a piece? He sold them for $1 a piece? He had like 1 million of them under. I mean,
sure.
I mean, yep. do you think I'm getting to be such a cynical Southside old whatever? There's a huge correlation between this mask phobia and the fact that there's people making these masks and they're giving money to them. That money's got to get spent here. If you and I came out with a hose that we could spray everybody on a train car,
that's true.
And it would be
the same amount of virtue signaling.
No, but I'm saying if we did
bring that hose, it would work.
If we just said, okay, we're going to go to the Alabama's football stadium, we're going to spray the place from a plane, uh-huh. and everybody's there going to not be able to get COVID for the rest of their life, they'd arrest us. We don't want that. This money's got to get spent now.
That's right.
I mean, if you got this mask deal, the last thing you need is tomorrow Fauci coming out and saying you don't have to wear no friggin' mask. You can't tell me there's no connection.
Well, there's such a political connection. I was at a event in Evanston this weekend, Saturday evening, and there were about five couples that were sitting outside around, you know, a fire pit just getting together as friends. And we were all sitting there, of course, without masks. We're outside and spaced, you know, very comfortably and appropriately, about 10 people. And then as people started to get up to leave, they put on masks to walk home about 11 o'clock at night. And I'm thinking, what are you even doing? What is that process of walking home when there's nobody around for forever just to put on a mask to walk home? It was a bizarre concept to me. You know, how some people are being trained into a certain type of presentation of themselves, you know, just to give off a certain type of virtue signal or something. I couldn't understand how you would sit with people you haven't seen in months for 2 hours, you know, in a somewhat close environment, and then to walk in the wild open. You would, at 11 o'clock at night, you would have a mask on. So
Jeff, last night I'm driving home
weird.
On Clybourne, and there's still some snow on the sidewalk, right? So I see this lady jogger, not to say she had a decent
lady
shape.
Lady Gaga?
The lady jogger. And she's got the total dark outfit on, right, running in the street. So there was some risk there, but she had her mask on. So what? Would she inevitably get hit by the car? By the way, when you guys were sitting around the campfire or whatever you were doing, now if somebody came by and like handed you another adult beverage, did you reach real far out and make sure you didn't get 6 feet away, or you didn't care as long as you had your drink made right?
No one's thinking that way, right?
No.
But when you got up to walk away, the mask goes on.
Oh, it is special, isn't it?
It is special.
But I mean, we're going to be fighting about this forever, because I mean, as they said, first day in economics class, it's the science of scarcity. I mean, there's a lot of people that are getting hurt by this, and a lot of people that are doing pretty well by it. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing the political discourse that you are. And who is ever in office, their people seem to do well, and the other guys don't. That's why they went back in, right, Jeff? I mean,
right.
So what's that?
It'll be very interesting, and I really don't claim to have the right transparency on that, but I'm hearing it more from people who are in Florida that I speak to in the course of business that, hey, you know, Florida really is open for business, and there's been a dramatic difference in terms of their economy and lockdown approach. And once the dust settles, I really do want to take a close look at those numbers and come to my own conclusions.
Yeah, I would too.
About, you know, New York's an anomaly and shouldn't be a fair comparison metric point, and that's not to give Cuomo any way off, but it was the epicenter. It's where it all began, and it was really the first spot to be hard hit. So I don't think it's fair to say, compare New York to Florida policies and results and per capita mortalities and economic outcome. I don't think that's a fair comparison, but it is fair to compare California and Florida and other states in Florida. So I'm really interested in seeing a fair assessment of that data.
I think if you go all the way through it, Jeff, I think some of the different places got hit with different strains of this. Because I think the people in California essentially got the strain from China, and I think the people on the East Coast got it from Europe when they really weren't expecting it at all. I think it was more of a shocker in New York than it was in California, because people, I think they were a little more aware of what was going on in China.
That's right.
And Chicago ended up getting it very quickly because of the airport, right, in the central location.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of study to sort of be done on this. And at the end of the day, I had it. I have the antibodies. To be honest, I'm starting to feel like an idiot putting this mask on. I'm doing this for somebody else's benefit. It's obviously not mine, right? And I don't think I can hurt anybody else. If I did, I certainly would wear eight of them, or I'd wear a helmet if I had to. But I honestly don't think. I mean, why are the people who are getting the vaccines wearing masks? But you know, yesterday we did on the show. I don't want to go through it again. But the interesting part is the way they're testing these vaccines. God, Jeff, it is so friggin' sloppy. I can't even go there. I mean, I think they're safe, and when my antibodies wear out, I'm going to go get one. So I'm not telling people not to. As a matter of fact, I'm doing the other thing. I think they're pretty good, but I mean the testing is so sloppy. I mean it's a C paper. I mean, the idea that the only people you count are the people that come back that are sick. I mean there's no testing whatsoever to the people you give the vaccine to. I mean I can't. It's unconscionable to me. When here
is that correct? Is
yeah.
that accurate?
Yeah,
that is the protocol.
You do 20,000. They're all the same. You do 20,000 people on each side, placebo on the other, and you wait for them to report back with either with moderate to severe symptoms. There's no. I mean, you would think that there would be a 500 person random group that you went and tested every few days, but the interesting part is we've just come through a year where if you go get tested positive, you're a pariah, even though you're not sick. And now they totally changed the protocol for the vaccines. I'm not saying that you shouldn't take one. I think you should. But it's the fact that now we don't count a moderate case. I mean, I would never have reported mine. I thought I had a mild case of the flu. Yeah, I would never have gone in. So I wouldn't have counted. Probably not. If I was taking the test. Maybe, you know, if they tell you that if you feel anything at all to come in, and they might be doing that at least. We're talking about this Johnson & Johnson test. You know, we're talking about 500 people showing up on one side and 300 on the other. That's a test out of 40,000 people without any random sampling of if people actually caught it and didn't. Maybe it made the symptoms much less. I don't think you're contagious, but what if you are? They don't know that. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Sure.
But but Johnson & Johnson, 66%. And come on. I mean, it's better than nothing. But when I go, I'm going to go get the Pfizer one or the Moderna one. They're better. It appears. S&P futures down 575, NASDAQ futures down 1650. I don't think you get to choose. I think the Johnson & Johnson one, because you don't have to refrigerate it and because it's one shot, I think that's headed for third world countries. And, you know, it's better than nothing. So anyway, we'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, welcome back, Stash Jacks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 9 now, NASDAQ futures down 34. They just were down 3.5. We went to break, and now they're down 9. So we're flipping around here, but not bad. Dow down 48 because they had a huge update yesterday. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 60.4%. It was up 0.6 last time we checked. FTSE still up 0.6, up 40 points. CAC around up 0.6 as well. That's 32 points. Over in Asia, we've got these guys have been flying around the last few days. Today, Nikkei down 255. It's 0.9%. They were down 1,000 the other day. They were like 4%, which is really something. Shanghai down 42. That's 1.2%. Hang Seng down 356. 1.2. They were down 1,000 as well, and then they came back almost 1,000 yesterday. So said there'd been huge volatility over in Asia. As a way of review of the big day yesterday, big positive day. Dow up 603. That's 2%. S&P 500 was up 91. That's 2.4%. NASDAQ up 396. That's a full 3%. That's a big move. Bonds. 10-year unchanged at 1.44. The bund minus 0.31. That's up 1 basis point. Japan at 0.13. It was up to 0.14, so it's down just a little bit. Oil up 16 cents. 60.80. And Brent up 7 cents. 63.76. Natural gas up 3 cents. 2.81. RBOB unchanged, but 194. Wow. You're not gonna be getting gas retail under $2 if RBOB's 194. Just so you know. Gold up $4, 1724. It's down so low it's starting to look like up, as they used to say on the floor. Silver down 20 cents, 26.47. Copper up another 4 cents, 4.15. And we've got Maddie's favorite crypto, Bitcoin, up 579. That's 1%. Plus, May, are you investing in Litecoin? That's up 1150 to 182. There's Litecoin, there's XRP.
You ask me this every day. I tell you the same thing every day. Just another crypto.
Yeah, but you're supposed to know this stuff, you and your guys. You're the young guys.
But my answer hasn't changed. It's just another crypto.
Which one do you have? Which one?
I don't
have
any of them, but there's a bunch of different cryptos.
How about traffic, weather, sports?
I've got that too. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We had an earlier crash this morning. That's the biggest crash in the area right now. It's affecting the tri-state northbound just before 82nd Street Toll Plaza there. This accident's blocking the three right lanes. There is one lane getting by. That's better news than an hour ago, but apparently two semis crashed at Roberts Road on the tri-state northbound, and that's caused major issues with crews on the scene. So you'll want to avoid that if at all possible. That's our slowest moving expressway. If you're coming in on the Ryan, you'll hit some brake lights heading into downtown as we have some red as you're approaching the circle, but no accidents or stalls to speak of. Same for the Bishop Ford. We're seeing some heavier traffic volumes than normal, but no accidents to report. I-57 looks okay. No issues on the outbound Eisenhower, but on the inbound side, it looks like we have a crash at North Avenue if you're coming eastbound on I-290, so keep that in mind. Edens looks okay. Kennedy, some traffic on the outbound side near O'Hare, and then on the Jane Addams I-90 on the inbound side just before Roselle Road, there was an earlier crash. That apparently has been cleared, but big-time congestion coming in on the Jane Addams I-90 just before Roselle Road. So some slow travel times out there. Give yourself plenty of time if you're heading out this morning. Weather today is sunny and very pleasant. A high of 44, so quite warm, significantly warmer than yesterday. Right now it's clear and 26 going up to a sunny 44. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 80 today. Right now it's clear and 51. In sports, the Bulls were the only game of note last night locally, and they were down big early, so you might have flipped it off. They actually came back, took a 6-point lead late against the Nuggets, only to blow it as they fell to Denver 118 to 112. Chief.
So, Jeff, last week you refused to answer me when I said, how do I get registered as a bona fide expert on extraterrestrial activity? So they have to come to me when somebody does show up and I get paid like $20,000 an hour to be on CNBC as an expert.
I think to be verified or as being authentic, I think it involves some sort of probe. So it's a decision you have to make.
I only want to know where you're sticking the probe. darn well that somebody will be there as an expert.
You've got to come up with a cow, one of the two.
Well, you know somebody will be an expert. It might as well be me. I don't know as much as he does, which is nothing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that issue will publish next week, probably about today, next week, Tuesday of next week.
I can't wait.
Luckbox's the May issue, and it's all about aliens and UFOs and outer space.
Well, how about if I read the magazine?
It goes extensively into space exploration, Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin, and SpaceX, of course, and Starlink, the satellite program. Talked to a lot of former NASA people, former astronauts, Harvard astrophysicists that directs the Black Hole Initiative. Talks about Oumuamua, which was the 2017 alien spacecraft that entered our galaxy, which is which is obviously controversial, but he's emphatic about that's the case that occurred. So it's really an interesting issue. I don't think I've had more fun in a while putting an issue together, and that's the next Luckbox. It's free at getluckbox.com.
All right, so now you got your answer. I'll study the magazine, give me a test, and if I pass, I'm an expert.
You know what? It's funny you mentioned the test thing. Let me recommend a book to your readers that I've been fascinated with lately. It's an older book, and just knowing how your mind works, Chief, I think you'd really
at least you think it
really
works. You know,
thing up. It's a book by Hans Rosling, Rosling, and it's called Factfulness. And I tripped over it because looking at Bill Gates's book blog and review. He had mentioned that it as being one of the most important books he's ever read, and picked it up and finally got around to reading it over the holiday break. You look at your stack of books that you're aspirational about, and I finally cracked one open, and it was this one, Factfulness, and I really appreciated it as a read. And somebody who likes to engage in logical discourse and look at a couple different sides of the question, like you and Matt do on a daily basis on your show, I think you would really find a lot in this book. And what it does in essence is does two things. First of all, it'll take a topic and then it'll ask you, basically quiz you as the reader as to what your knowledge is on that topic. And then it will proceed to tell you why you were wrong, not just because you didn't know the facts, but because of the biases that you have that you may not be aware of that caused you to misinterpret the actual data. And it's a fascinating process to go through, and somehow the book engages the individual reader to do that with these different topics, mostly about global issues like global economics or global health or global nutrition facts. Education is a big topic, but it's really a fascinating book because it allows you to assess your own biases and your cognitive biases as to, you know, why you deceive yourself when the actual data is in plain sight. A fascinating book called Factfulness.
That sounds good. Any truth to the rumor that when Klaatu showed up in the spaceship, he really wasn't caring about war, that he really was looking for an offshore tax haven?
That's awesome. I have no idea. I don't know. I think that's just a rumor.
It's interesting that you would... I doubt if the book... Were you falling into those traps? Because you seem like you don't fall into those traps too often. Were you falling into
them? No, we all do. I've always been a fan of like understanding the heuristics and, you know, the cognitive biases that are engaged in speech. It goes back to an old, you know, when I was debating in high school and college, you know, being aware of those and being able to call them out was always an advantage. But invariably, we all make those mistakes. And as of late, probably, you know, it's political bias that tends to confuse most people about everything. You know, just where people have the wrong notion because they're led to believe something. I had a conversation with one of my editors who is just a brilliant editor and has a, you know, and separate from the fact that he's a brilliant editor, he happens to have a very, very hard left political position, and it tends to bias him in in his work, and I see that, and we've discussed it from time to time, because if he's going to illustrate something with an example, it will tend to be an example that illustrates a position only from, you know, one political perspective and not, you know, right down the middle. But we had a conversation about, we were looking at the data, and this just occurs to me that this is comparable to what this book was speaking to. We were looking at the data as to how the general population feels about school choice, and that the African-American community is 72% in favor of school choice, and that minorities with children in that are K through 12 are 81% in favor of school choice, and that the Hispanic community is overwhelmingly are in favor of it, etc. And I was making the case in an issue that we were preparing that had a reason to have a column about education, that if we wanted to make a baby step that would be acceptable probably to both sides, we should look where there's common interest, and both elements of the left and elements of the right seem to converge on this issue. And he took direct opposition to it, saying, well, no, that's an issue of the far right. School choice is an issue of the far right. And it's only because he's been primed to believe that.
Right, right.
You know, he's been told over and over again that somehow school choice is not in the benefit of minority families, when in fact the majority of minorities are in favor of that. And I pointed that out, and it was just an interesting process, because his own political bias caused him to misinterpret the actual data. I was just simply saying, making the point that if you want to arrive at a consensus, here's an issue that the constituents of both sides seem to agree with. Yet because of how it's been politically framed, he couldn't see that. And it's a perfect example of what this book identifies, is your own biases that get in the way of you properly interpreting data.
I'm gonna say, Jeff, that how just what you just said, though. Two things. One is, I have a piece of paper here. When you come back in the office, I'll see if I can dig it up for you. It had to do with a study by somebody that said that he's a rational human being kind of guy. You know, he's a University of Chicago guy, I think. But that even crooks are rational, right? So his idea was that most people have figured out that it's not worth the time. Your vote is not worth enough for you to get up on all the issues yourself, especially in some areas like mine, where, you know, half the guys are so you can't make an educated decision on your own, because it's not worth it. You know, to put in 1,000 hours of study for your vote when you're one of 90 bazillion people. So what do people end up doing? Is they essentially attach themselves to one side or the other, and they let the side do the thinking for them. So, okay, the Republicans are this way and this way. I'm a Republican, that's the way I am. Or a Democrat, you know, I guess left, I'm a liberal, so this is the way the liberals come down, so I'm going to be over here. And I think that's reached almost like a, talk about an epidemic stage, to where people immediately think of, well, where's my side on this? When in fact,
right,
if you looked at it yourself, you might say, well, you know, this is the way I feel, and I don't really care if my side feels the other way. I think they're wrong on this one. That's what you don't see. People,
I think it's one of the worst qualities you can have as a person, yeah, too, is to blindly have an opinion on something solely because your quote-unquote side conditioned you to believe in it that way and look at it that way.
Well, if you're on the left, you can't give Trump a compliment. If you're on the right, you think he's the greatest guy on earth. Well,
right, Jesus, and you overlook all the negatives. Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
Right. It's true.
I don't know.
The only rule I have for my teens, there's a lot of ways that teens can get in trouble, but in my house, it's if you can never call yourself a Democrat or a Republican. I mean, it's the one thing that would drive
me crazy. What about a libertarian? Is that okay? You know,
because both parties are invariably wrong on so many issues that seem to be their, you know, the consensus that they own.
Yeah, I don't know.
Why would you want to?
You know, that's not where we are, as Matt just pointed out. You know, we're actually probably at the extreme end of that, as some good research showed during the last general election, that the middle, the political middle, has shrunk to its smallest population ever. There are less people that call themselves truly, or let's say that act as truly undecided voters. There are more political partisans now than ever before. So that's the real unfortunate.
So, Matt, explain to me how...
First of all, I want to understand, why would anyone ever call themselves a Democrat or a Republican? Like, what do you have to gain by doing that? unless you're an actual congressperson.
Well, when they both were fairly...
I'd define myself by my astrological sign before I would do that.
Right.
there was a time, Maddie, though, when they... I mean, sort of on the same thing. I want to ask both of you guys, because the ages are different. So, you know, Jeff, without knowing, he always pisses me off, because before I'm going to ask a question, he must read my mind. He essentially... My question, even back in Clinton's time, which, you know, wasn't all that long ago, the politics...
Well, it's been 30 years.
Well, okay, but I mean, well, for me, it's... Well, my point is, the politics used to be that the bulk of people were in the middle, was what you're talking about, Manny. I mean, I think you're exactly right on this. And if you were running for office, if you were running as a Democrat, you'd wander over to the tree huggers and you'd get a few checks... You take a shower, wash your hands with vinegar, and then you go back to the middle where the votes were. And then the same thing on the right. You'd go get some, you know,
like
some
the evangelicals or something.
Yeah, I mean, you'd go get your money. Uh-huh. But the vote, and Clinton was the best at this because he could take a check for somebody and forget your name like 5 seconds later. But, so he had totally amoral as to the, you know, but Bush wasn't. I mean, Bush actually felt he owed these guys a tax decrease on the same year he put us in a war. You know, look where that got us. But my point being is you always went back to the middle to where most people were, like Jeff just said. But now it's not like that at all. Each side has like their 25 or 30% that are rabid. And if you think you're strong enough, either Trump or Biden or whatever, you're willing to take a chance on splitting the ones down the middle. It's a totally different dynamic. Or where am I wrong, Jeff?
Well, no, I would agree with that.
Where did it change?
The only pushback I would offer is Biden would not make sense if that was fully true.
Well,
because
but
he is talk about like the most like milquetoast middle type dude there is.
Well, but he followed a guy where Wayne Madsen say? He's like the guy we just want in there at 80 years old just to tied things down for a while.
Right, just to like calm things
down. Yeah, and so many people are so happy to not have a Twitter storm every day, even if they don't like the
guy. I'm one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, but right. Jeff, when did this all change? I think it changed with my opinion, again, worth nothing, and this one is maybe because there's not that many people in the unions anymore, that there were just as many, that you used to have a union blue-collar workforce that was, you know, 20% of the population. Now it's down to 7 or something. I mean, somehow or another, this whole middle just lost its voice, lost its something. Where there's so many people now that are making X number and something on the high end. I don't know that many people that are making, what middle class be now? 70? 65? Something like that? I mean, something dramatically changed. I mean, and Trump was smart enough to pick up on it. Hey, I've got my 35% of the people. I'm running against Hillary. Nobody likes her. I mean, I'll take my chances on the middle. I don't even care if they like me. I mean, I'm going to split there anyway. So if I come in with 35% of the vote, I'm going to win. And he did. I mean, he sensed that. He has a sense about him. He's not like he's an idiot. A lot of ways I think he is, but in that way he's not. But I mean, when did this all change? I mean, it is so different from, I mean, if you were to look at the Democrats that I knew at Pullman and those kinds of places, there were union guys there. You'd swear they were, I won't say right wing, but they're as moderate as you could get.
The Blue Dogs, you know, that whole world.
Well, the Chuck Percy and Adlai Stevenson, I'm not Adlai Stevenson, he was a Democrat, Everett Dirksen, Republicans, they weren't rabid. They were just people that liked, you know, a little less taxes, a little something, something. And to get back to your school thing, though, Jeff, how do you, when you ask, you and I, you more than me, because, I mean, the stuff you do with this magazine, I'm fascinated by. I'm going to say you could ask that question of all those minority people in such a way that you get the response you want. The survey you're talking about. I'm not saying somebody did that.
Sure, we do a lot of surveys, and we understand the science of how a question is framed.
Because right now, I mean, from what I understand, when I went to school in Canada for a semester, half a year, there's no semester in first grade, that whatever school was accredited, your check from the government followed you to that school. I don't know if it was every province, but that's the way it was in Ontario. And I don't even know if that's the way it still is. But in Chicago, the idea of the charter school, the way it has been sold to people, is that if all of a sudden, if you went to Marist High School, where I went, and your 10 grand from the state or 15 grand from the state followed you there, that would be less money that they could give to Inglewood, and the people at Inglewood would suffer. That's the way it's been. That's the way it, instead of saying there now would be competition, at the end of the day, it probably would be better, and Inglewood would be forced to get better or something. That's one side. The other argument would be that money is here, and if we start spreading around to other people, guess what? There's less here, right? Isn't that the argument?
Yeah, but
I'm not saying I agree with
it. Why
would
it be true?
I'm saying that is the standard argument. I mean, whether or not, I think you and I both disagree with it, but before we can disagree with it, we at least got to understand it, right? Sure. But right now, the way it is, where people in the Catholic schools and other private schools get nothing, and all of a sudden you say we're going to give them something. Well, where's it going to come from? The people in the public schools are saying it's coming from us and we don't want it to happen, right?
Right.
Well, where am I wrong? I mean,
no. No.
And for a long time, the public schools have essentially had a free ride because 25% of the people went to other schools while they were still paying their taxes. Correct?
It still is the case.
At one point, the Catholic schools in Chicago, I don't think they ever made it to 50%. I think they got to 40 one year or something, Jeff. I don't think it's anywhere near that now, but it's 15. I'm going to say in the early 60s, in the 50s, it probably was at least a third went to Catholic schools. And I don't think it's anywhere close to that now, is it?
Not sure, but it sure is interesting to see how differently those schools have approached the pandemic. I think that's when you can make comparisons, when you have a true outlier event and you get to evaluate the response. I mean, those kids are in school. Those kids have been in school during this period.
What do you make of, just on an economic front, who's going to be the first? Maybe it's more of a Maddie question. Yesterday I saw come across the tape that the Chicago Housewares show is not, Maddie, would you dig up what month that was, has been canceled again this year?
Housewares is in August. That was early August.
And they're already canceling it?
About the same week that, it's the week after Lollapalooza. So the Housewares show and the National Restaurant Show, that's the big one. That's in May. So between the two, you've got about 125,000 visitors. Usually 200 million or more comes to the city through those two events. So that's a big loss. 125,000 visitors between the National Restaurant Show and the Housewares International Show.
Who's going to give the all clear one of these days and say we're having a convention?
You know, going out to August to me was a little bit of a surprise, particularly when the city gave kind of telescoped the idea that they were open to the idea of larger event coordination and asked the police to start considering that. I think Lollapalooza will be a question. You know, that's what, first week of August, and I guess if you had to bet, you had to bet against it. But last year, I was just looking it up, 214 shows being canceled cost Chicago $29 billion in revenue.
We got
the $35 from a 6 mile speeding ticket. So.
Yeah, we'll make it up.
So I think you can offset that over time.
Yet another. That's why when it kind of bugs me when rich people tell me that poor people don't pay taxes. I mean, how regressive is that?
All these regressive taxes that exist everywhere, like the lottery.
Yeah,
being one of them. Right?
Parking tickets. It's crazed. We're reaching a point. I mean, we only have a few minutes, Jeff. But when I was in college, I took taxes, even though I was in economics. Dedinko, he was a football player. Dedink was his name, and this is back in '74, say, and he said, you know, when you look at taxes, virtually everywhere in the world, no matter how screwed up the system, you end up collecting about 25% from people. He goes, in Italy, if you pay off the guy, you don't have to pay it. You know, whatever it is, you come down to where the federal tax receipts get to be like 25%. We're reaching a point here, and he goes, and most people think that that's somewhat fair. You know, give God what's God's and Caesar's what Caesar's, right? Is what the man said, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. We're reaching a point here. I think there are people that if they don't do it just right or can't anticipate, I think there's people that are pushing 75% sometimes. Remember when Matty doesn't remember this, he's too young, but Matty, it used to be like, you know, they got the debt clock now. There used to be somebody who calculated how long you had to work every year before you made your first dime for yourself.
Yeah.
It was what? It was April for a while, and then it became May. I'm saying for some people now.
Exactly.
I mean, I always use the example, I shouldn't because maybe I don't like him. Phil Mickelson. If he wins a tournament in California, I think he still lives there, I'm not sure he does. If he loses a tournament in California, in like December 30th, and you can't do anything about it. I'm going to say that between the federal tax, the state tax, his property tax, sales tax, you know, title on his car, I'm going to say that month the dude's probably pushing 75 or 70. How do you do that? It's just way too much, Jeff. Way too much. I mean, on a moral scale, it's too much. I don't even know Phil's got enough money. I'm not worried about it. You know what I'm saying? We're at the point here where how much do we really want to charge the guy living in a neighborhood who's working for cash on a Saturday to make his ends meet? Do you really want to hit him up for a 35-hour check when the minimum wage is like 10 or whatever it is? that's really yeah. worth 3 hours' work? I mean, what are we doing? Just yeah. asking.
Well, I know we're running out of time, but let me shift gears yeah. for 1 second. I got a quick pop quiz for you. You know, I'm always looking at the predicted markets, which are the legal political wagering markets at predicted.org. There's two that are really of interest right now, and they're both 50-50 bets. So, Matt, Chief, how would you place your money? Will Cuomo be in office by the end of the year? That is currently paying 1-to-1.
I'd say yes, but I don't think he runs again.
I don't think so. I think his reputation is floundering.
Which one is? Are we talking? We're worried about the sexual harassment, or are we worried about the people in nursing homes? Or both?
I think it's covering up the nursing homes.
I think both. Yeah. I bought the note at 40 cents. It's at 50 cents now. I'm with Matt. We'll see what happens, but it's the market's calling it 50-50. The other one out of New York is Andrew Yang is the front runner in the New York City mayoral election race. He's at 48 cents for a yes right now. So what do you think, Yang or not?
He's the guy who ran for president, right?
Yeah, he did. By the way, I think, Jeff, you predicted that he would be mayor. That was one of your outline
calls,
right?
I did. Yeah. I predicted it early before he announced his candidacy.
I hope he becomes president someday and throw away all my ties.
I don't know much about him, but from what I've read about him, he seems like a pretty smart guy to me. But I don't know what your read is.
Well, he's got to be a smart guy.
I think he's a really smart guy. Pretty engaging, too. And seems to be smart when it comes to business, too. We tried to get him, do an interview with him at Luckbox Magazine for our political issue during the campaign season, right? At that point, he had dropped out of the race. But he wanted a fee to be interviewed, which you never, ever, ever get. Either it's yes or no, but nobody says, I'll do it for money. So we said no, but to me, hey, he's smart with his time, I'll say that much.
God. Jeff, thank you very much. But as usual, good stuff. S&P futures down 450, NASDAQ futures down 19. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.